Welcome to Happy Hour. Happy Monday, everybody. He's Adam Hairhuck. I'm Sean Cantwell, and we're coming off yet another exciting victory for your Detroit Football Lions. And
oh, yeah.
There is obviously a lot of stuff that we need to unpack today. I mean, we're going to get into one particular play here in a little bit. And really, there's some kind of just historical context that really needs to be established here. We also are going to do, at some point in the show, NFL overreactions, because it is Monday and that's what we do around here. But we'll go ahead and do the first thing that we kind of do typically here, which is run down all the fun audio and whatnot from the week. All the real good bits of Dapper Dan Miller's play-by-play here, and kind of give you a bit of a rundown of the game as it happened. So we'll go ahead and start this thing. We're going to go ahead and skip the part where Green Bay made a field goal because, we'll talk about that later. But Amon-Ra St. Brown kicked off the scoring for Detroit, waited till the second quarter to do it, but here goes.
So here we go, fourth and goal for the Lions from just inside the Green Bay 3. Goff's got it back, looking, throwing, left side, wants Amon-Ra,
yes.
Makes the grab, touchdown Detroit Lions! Oh, baby, what a throw that time by Jared Goff. Amon-Ra spinning and making the catch, getting 2 feet down, and the Lions take the lead. The Dan Campbell gamble pays off.
As it occasionally does, and it did in this case.
Headstand and all.
Right? I still, someone needs to fully explain this to me, like the whole headstand thing, because he did it. There's another player that did it this week. I don't really get it. Like, there's some reference of some sort that I just am not getting.
Yeah.
But either way, it worked out well for the Lions as St. Brown opened the scoring for this team. From there, you had the Packers then come back and, that next drive did not go very well for Detroit. We'll go ahead and I'll play the audio here for you real quick. We will come back and discuss fully later on in the program, but this happened to Brian Branch.
Long count by Jordan Love. There's the snap. Lions rush 4. Love back and looking. A lot of time. Now he steps into a throw downfield. It is incomplete. And a flag comes in on the hit.
Yeah.
Incomplete intended for Bo Melton. And there was a hit after the play that drew the flag. And this is going to be a big one for the Packers. It's going to bail them out of a 3rd-and-20 situation. Brian Branch comes in there leading with his helmet to the helmet of Bo Melton. And that's going to cost the Lions significantly.
Personal foul. Unnecessary roughness. Defense, number 32. 15-yard penalty from the previous spot. Automatic first down.
And I'm going to pause right there briefly because I'm not going to try and lie to you and tell you that that wasn't a penalty. Like, while I'm not sure if he really could have avoided the hit if he wanted to after, you know, realizing that the guy didn't catch the ball there, we'll talk about the ejection part in a minute, but I don't think there's any denial that that's a penalty all day, every day in this league. No argument with me on that. What I do argue with is what happened next.
Such a big penalty. So instead of 3rd-and-20 for the Packers now, it is an automatic first down off the personal foul.
In addition to the foul, number 32 of Detroit is disqualified for the rest of the game.
Wow.
For an unnecessary?
Are you serious?
This isn't college.
Yeah.
There's no targeting in the NFL.
Yeah, I don't understand.
I don't get that. I think Dan Campbell wants an explanation.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And that call apparently did not come from on the field from Cleet Blakeman and crew, but rather from the office in New York saying that, yep, he's gone. Even though you could argue that there were two hits on the day that were every bit as bad, particularly the one on Chris Olave with the Saints who were they playing? But it resulted in ultimately a trip to the hospital. He got a concussion after that against
Ouch.
Carolina. Like that was an absolutely just terrible hit for him. Like he got stretchered off the field, and penalty, yes, But no, and it was bad enough that Fox didn't actually replay that hit. But he didn't. The guy who made the hit there did not get tossed from the game. Or the other argument is there was another one in the Dolphins-Bills game. Jordan Poyer hit Keon Coleman. There is a helmet-to-helmet hit on a long third down, and he launched him. It's not exactly comparable, but he had already launched by the time the ball got there, where you could argue Branch was still two steps away. Now, granted, given the field condition that day, I don't think he was going to be able to pull up and stop at any rate, because you saw how badly it was absolutely pouring in Green Bay. So I'm not going to necessarily say that even with two steps back, he was going to be able to stop and avoid the hit that he was laying down. Ejection, I'm sorry. I can't get on board with it. Like, there's no... you can make the argument that hit has gotten guys ejected in the past. I mean, last year there were three of them. So it's not exactly, I guess, unprecedented per se, but at the time it didn't seem like something that would warrant an ejection, because those were all, much like the Jordan Poyer hit from the Bills game, these were all guys launching from their feet and towards the defender, and that's not what Brian Branch did.
No.
But they claim it was, the hit was late and it was avoidable. Not sure that he realized that it was late. I think he was under the impression the guy that Melton caught the football. But that being said, I don't think you could apply. I don't think it was necessarily avoidable there, given the condition of the field that afternoon. I feel like you pull up there, then you're risking an injury more than anything. It's not necessarily that the smart thing to do, to lower your head and go blind head first into a receiver. And Brian Branch has done a little bit of that and hasn't historically kept his head up. But I just can't get on board with the idea that was a ejectionable offense. What I do find hilarious is that after that, he caused another 15-yard penalty.
He was just waving goodbye.
Right? And I love that Fox, and at the time, was being so coy about what happened. Oh, he hit something to the fans or whatever. Like, he flipped him the bird.
Yeah,
double birds at that. I've seen the pictures going around today, and I love it. I want that as our wallpaper here on the studio computer, because that's just so fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
But here's the funny thing about all of that. Despite the fact that Brian Branch just gave the Packers 30 free yards when they were on third down and about to be basically forced to punt it away, and then gave them that much position, this happens after that.
Spot down, kick on the way. It is up, and it is no good. He missed it. McManus misses it to the left, and the Packers come up empty. So the Lions hurt themselves with a couple of penalties, but the Packers say, hey, no problem. We'll just kick it wide left. So that's a huge break for Detroit.
Yeah, despite the fact that all of that went down, it came down to a field goal that McManus, who was normally fairly reliable, ended up missing. So they didn't even score any points out of that. From there, Jake Bates, all he does apparently is keep being perfect.
Bates is ready. Hogan Hatton to snap. There it is. Fox the spot. There it is. Kick away, up and good. Jake Bates sends it through, and the Lions extend their lead with 58 seconds to go in the half. It is now Detroit 10 and the Packers 3.
Green Bay from there tries to come back. All right, we're going to try and put some points on the board before halftime. Kirby Joseph says no. No, that will not be happening today.
Love takes the shotgun snap. Lions bring a late blitz. Love back, looking, being chased. Love throw. Picked off by the Lions. Kirby Joseph, left side. He's going to go, baby. Count it down. 5. End zone. Touchdown, Detroit Lions. Oh, how big is that? How big is that? Packers trying
animated
for some
he
late
gets.
Magic here, but it's the Lions that come in with a bolt of lightning. Pick 6.
I could also sit there listening, tell they kind of that they backed down their mics and stuff because he had started just screaming that much in the like early on in the game. Like, all right, he's gonna blow the mics. We're gonna peak like crazy. Like we gotta turn this guy down, and there's no turning Dan Miller down. So, but Kirby Joseph, I mean, the man is just an absolute ball hawk. You could have a pass somewhere on the other side of the country, and he's here in Detroit, and he's still gonna make it over there and pick off that ball. Like he just is on top of it. Like this man is going to be, is gonna make big money with this team. Like he is absolutely everything that you hoped he would be. Like how this man does this? Like you aren't human, dude. I don't get it. But I love everything about it. Like the secondary, it really looked in large part pretty good despite losing Brian Branch, and Kirby Joseph is a big part of the reason for that. And the only real mistake made here, like the only deep ball that was successful for Jordan Love, it was a 41-yard pass to Jaden Reed. I can't even be mad at Ennis Rakestraw on the coverage there. Like, he did everything he's supposed to do there. Like, there's unless he were to start with blatant pass interference, I don't think he could have done anything to keep Jaden Reed from catching that ball. So I can't be mad about that. And that was the only catch that was made for 20 yards or more in that game. Oh, you want to hear just some of the fun, some of the stupidity that happened at the end of that game? Just their attempts, really, to do things and how much they failed here. Here's a couple things for you.
There's the snap. Love again low. Love's got to dive on top of it. And the Lions are on top of him back at the 20-yard line. Remember, the starting center for Green Bay, Josh Myers, isn't playing today. You got Elgton Jenkins in there. Two bad snaps in a row cost Green Bay a golden opportunity, a loss of 6 on third down. Love is going to work out of the gun. He's got Jacobs to his left. There's the snap. Love hands to Jacobs, tries the right side of that line. It's going to be very close. Did he get it? He needed to get down to the 8. I don't know if he did. It's going to depend upon the spot. The Lions are saying no. Terrific work up front by the Lions defense that time.
Fourth out. Stop. Yep, they're pointing Lions ball.
Yeah.
That's it. Lions with a huge stop on 4th and 1.
Didn't even matter that they didn't score again after Jahmyr Gibbs' touchdown run in the third, which I just realized we didn't play that cut yet. Let's do that.
Goff out of the gun. Gibbs to his right. Jared takes the snap. Hands to Jahmyr. There he goes. Inside the 10. Inside the 5. Touchdown, Detroit Lions. They just parted the seas and Jahmyr ran to the daylight. Touchdown, and the Lions extend their lead. What a beautiful play.
Like, you could tell at this point, they've pretty much demolished the Packers' spirit, and I'm 120% here for that. And from there, they never really managed to catch back up. I mean, you got one garbage time touchdown in the fourth and a 2-point conversion following, and that would be it. Like, from there, like, at the very end, David Montgomery just kind of plowed through and secured the first downs that were needed to put a kind of a wrap-up on that thing. I also loved that at the end. All right, you think they're gonna run to Montgomery. They end up passing to Montgomery, a wide-open Montgomery for a first down just to kind of rub it in Green Bay's face, even though I was kind of hoping they'd go for the touchdown and really just cement it, but I guess we wouldn't get quite that lucky. But everything on your offense is just it's firing on all cylinders, more so than we've ever seen from this team. Like, you can't honestly say that we've ever seen a Lions offense look this good, or really just all the way around, like the ridiculous like video game numbers. These are like greatest show on turf numbers, man. Like Jahmyr Gibbs is like averaging, I think, over the last 6 games, like 6.4 yards a carry. This is insane. Like, this is Madden numbers, dude. There's no reason for any of this. Like, Jared Goff didn't have to do a lot, but he's absolutely taking every bit of what the defense is giving him, letting his teammates make plays. He tied for the league low in air yards per pass attempt, but is also put up a ridiculously high completion percentage. Like, this dude's on pace, I think, to finish the year with, like, an 80% completion percentage. We've never seen anything like that in the NFL. Like, we're looking at, like, Drew Brees kind of numbers, but somehow better. It's insane that you're looking at that. Like, he's right now completing 75% of his passes on the year. And can the Lions really keep this up? Can they keep up the offense at the pace that it's gone over these last six games? This is now their first time they've won six games in a row since 95.
Wow. I mean, they're going to lose at least one more game before the end of the season, right?
Yeah. Well, of course.
They'll have one. I mean, if everything's stacked against them, they had things stacked against them yesterday. It was the first time they didn't play under a roof, and it rained.
Yeah, because we've heard this so much about, Jared Goff can't play outdoors in the weather. You know,
yeah.
How often do we hear about that?
So they had that going against them. Then the weather that actually came in, all that side, that diagonal rain that
it's
was coming
rained
in,
sideways,
and you're still without Hutch. So I mean, they had
basically without any pass rush at all.
Yeah,
and anytime like. Their pass rush just never got home, ever. Like, you saw it on the play in which Brian Branch ultimately got ejected. They gave Jordan Love all day to throw. Like, I can't be happy about that. I mean, they got one, like, between, not a single defensive end had a single quarterback hit on the day. Isaiah Thomas, James Houston, and Al-Quaid Muhammad combined for one tackle. The running game, they weren't good at stopping that either. Like, tight ends were just burning them left and right. I mean, Ali McNeil did a nice job on the inside, don't get me wrong. And Levi Onwuzurike on the pick six, yeah, nice work there. But they're just not stopping the pass with any sort of effectiveness. Aaron Glenn can blitz all he wants. It's not getting home. Pass rush isn't getting to the QB. They're not putting pressure on anybody. They're giving guys all day to throw. Please... Brad Holmes, I know you listen to this show every day, and I don't blame you, but if we could please make Za'Darius Smith happen before I go on the air tomorrow, that'd be great. Like this is all I want for Christmas is a pass rusher or two. If you can somehow get a combo deal on Myles Garrett and Za'Darius Smith, I'm good with it. If we got to go call the Saints on Chase Young. Get him and Za'Darius Smith in here. But I need something. This can't last. Like this, like you're not going to be able to get away with that forever. Please make it happen. We got like T-minus 24-ish hours. Go do it. That's all I'm asking. Am I asking too much, Adam? I don't feel like I'm asking too much.
No, you're not.
I do have a little bit of good news here in the time we have remaining in this. First break that we're way over on. I have some news regarding the Za'Darius Smith status. Adam Schefter had tweeted something out today, which was rather interesting. I mean, there were already a source out there saying that he was likely to land in Detroit the next day or so. That had first come out from Mike Florio over at Pro Football Talk. Through his... it said that it was expected that this will be done, but Schefter had tweeted out something interesting today. And Schefter is, I mean, he's as insider gets. He hasn't put this stuff out there unless it is pretty much a done deal. In fact, I have audio of Schefty on the Pat McAfee show today talking about this very thing. Take a listen.
We think they've been in it since the beginning. Obviously, Christian Kirk going there, and then allegedly Ayuk was going to potentially sign a deal. They had a big offer, so they've been very active. Is it the other teams potentially not wanting to trade him? The player? How does this? What do you think is going to hold up some of this stuff here if it does happen? Because Adam Thielen potentially going to be a Steeler because he didn't dress, but he did practice. Or are they just gearing up for him to be traded? And then allegedly Za'Darius Smith, the trade was already in talks for him to end up as a Detroit Lion. It's like, how do these come together? And when they're reported as like they have a deal, is that how do we know what's real and what isn't over the next 24
months? Well, I think every situation is different. Like Devontae Adams, Pat, your big story that day, you know, that trade was agreed to on Saturday. Did you know that?
No, I did not know that. I did not know
that. Yeah, Saturday. That trade was agreed to Saturday.
Did you know that? Did you know
that? Well, I found out about it after that it was agreed to Saturday. Yeah, yeah. I didn't know it was agreed to Saturday, that Saturday, or Sunday. Yeah, yeah. Found out later it was agreed to Saturday, yes.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So, again, we'll use a Darius Smith. You brought that up. Do I think the Lions and Browns have had significant talks? Yeah. Do I think they have agreed on comps? No, I think they're still arguing about that. Could there be another team that steps in and offer? Yes. Do I think ultimately the Browns and Lions will figure out a way to get it done? I do, but things change. You never know. But I think there have been enough conversations. And you could go on with almost every player. Teams are checking in on all these guys. Hey, any interest in this? No, yes. Or teams aren't calling back. There are always teams checking in just to kind of get a feel because they don't want to miss a way to try to upgrade their roster, whether they're acquiring a player or draft pick compensation. We could look at the teams right now with two wins and say, would any of those teams be in the market to move on and trade some players to get draft pick compensation? You know, the winning teams want to upgrade. So that's sort of where we're at with teams continuing to check in with one another.
So there you go. Schefter saying it's happening. Schefter saying Za'Darius Smith is going to be a Detroit Lion. That's what I'm going with. He thinks there's going to be a deal done, and he doesn't speak on these things if there's not pretty well certainty on it. So there you go. Sometime between now and Tuesday, Za'Darius Smith is going to be a Detroit Lion. You heard it from Florio. You heard it from Schefty. That's all I need. That's all I needed right there. On that note, we got to hit a break. It is happy hour at your local alternative, Solid State Radio. So now that we've got basically confirmation, as much confirmation as I need from Adam Schefter that the Za'Darius Smith thing is going to end up being a done deal, and I'm hopeful that the Lions will indeed add another pass rusher before tomorrow's 4 o'clock deadline. Now that I've at least gotten a little bit of reassurance here, so we have to talk about something. As far as this team and your expectations and your hopes and dreams and whatnot, and that is, the Lions are on a, as of right now, kind of a historic pace as far as their offense.
They're looking good.
They're looking to do things that we haven't seen since like the greatest show on turf or arguably the 07 Patriots. And the common denominator in those is that those teams won Super Bowls. And I've seen a lot of people. First off, I got to ask, can the Lions sustain? I mean, obviously, you're not going to win every game the rest of the season. No one's expecting that. No one's planning for that. But can the Lions maintain this pace? Can Jared Goff keep doing what he's doing? Can Gibbs keep being better than any running back in the league in yards per carry? Can all of this keep going on the pace that it has over these last six games?
I'm bringing up the schedule right now. I mean, we've talked about the schedule at nauseam, but I'm trying to remember.
Houston's up next.
Houston, that one's going to be a tough one.
It's not going to be easy. I mean, they're playing in Houston to boot, and that team is currently sitting at 6-3. But right now, statistically, at least by the win-loss record here, there's only one team better than you, and that is the Kansas City Chiefs, who play tonight, I believe, on Monday Night Football.
Okay. Then Jacksonville, Indianapolis, Chicago on Thanksgiving, Green Bay again, Buffalo, Chicago, San Fran, and Minnesota.
And again, I'm not saying I expect that you're going to win every game necessarily going forward, but I guess what I'm asking is the things that we've seen. Like, I mean, they've blown out teams. They blew out the Titans. They blew out Dallas. You played Minnesota close. You kind of blew the Packers out. Like, we're talking multiple double-digit wins. Like, four double-digit victories in the last five games.
Yep.
During this six-game win streak. Is any of this sustainable? Is this offense sustainable? Can Jared Goff being seemingly perfect every week still be a sustainable thing? Like,
yes.
All of this?
Yes.
Okay, so then, can you say then, this team is the favorite to win the Super Bowl, and this team can, in fact, win a Super Bowl?
Yes. Yes, I can.
I just need to hear it from some people, because I hear a lot of people who think that, oh yeah, the Lions could totally keep this pace up, but like you try to get the word Super Bowl out of their mouth. It's like it's like I don't know. It's like
You're jinxing it.
Right. Like just let it happen. It's not that shall not be named. Like we're not.
Yeah,
it's
we've
the
already
Super Bowl,
said it
not
twice.
Voldemort,
you,
man. Like, come
you,
on.
You just said it a third time. If you could knock that off, that'd be great.
Like, there's absolutely no reason that this team playing the way it is can't win a Super Bowl.
Can we call it? That's four times. Can we call it something else? The Big Barbecue or something?
All I'm saying is, if you're gonna be about it, be about it. Like, if you're going to go and suggest that this is a team that can make that can have video game numbers and routinely put that up from week after week and assume that this is a sustainable thing, every other team that is in this stratosphere has won a Super Bowl. And I'm absolutely saying it with a fair amount of confidence here at at whatever time it is on a Monday afternoon on November 4th that this team can win a Super Bowl this year.
That's five times.
You're jinxing us. Stop it.
That stuff, it's not real. It's real like the salary cap in the NFL. It's not. It's all fake. None of it matters. There's no reason they can't. Absolutely no reason they can't. And I know this, that we live in a town where people have been burned enough by the prospect of the Lions being good. They're used to that over six decades of this team being anywhere from mediocre to atrocious. I understand that. But look at what they're doing right now.
Yeah.
In every facet of the game. This offense is the best offense in the National Football League, bar none. Your special teams unit, Jack Foss could literally kick a field goal from like Jacksonville and still flip the field back in Detroit. Like,
right.
He, like, they can't do anything wrong. And then Khalif Raymond, you see the way that man can return a punt, like, 60 yards? Yeah, whatever. Yeah, just run, no, like, return it 90 for a touchdown. Like, thing that I'm not entirely in love with right now is your pass rush, and you can fix that in the next 24 hours.
But, I mean, we started getting cocky. We started saying we're Super Bowl bound, and then the football gods took away Aiden Hutchinson from us. He says, I broke my leg in two places. The team doctor says, well, don't go to those places anymore.
I'm not saying be cocky about it. I'm not saying be that guy. That's not what I'm asking for. That's not what I'm necessarily, because let's be honest, this team and the fans, once they get a little bit of taste of that glory, do kind of get that way. But what I am saying is that there are legitimate reasons to believe that you can win it all this year. With or without Hutchinson. I'm not saying I think you can do it if you don't get Za'Darius Smith or someone comparable before the trade deadline, but I am saying that you can, in fact, do it if you just take care of that one thing.
So at the Big Barbecue, it's going to be Eminem versus Taylor Swift.
Probably. And right now, can you really sit and say that there, other than you can make an argument for Baltimore, is there really a team that here that you can sit and say that you can't compete with, that they are without question better than you? I can't say that about KC. KC has gotten extraordinarily lucky this year. Mahomes is throwing picks like crazy, like we've never seen out of him. He was leading the league in picks at one point. He still has more picks than touchdowns. And there are so many things going wrong over there, but it seems that's one where their defense is just absolutely, you know, kept them in it. It's not necessarily because Mahomes is having playing the best football of his career by any means. I can't sit here and say today that you're not better than the Chiefs. Pass rush issues aside, I can't say you're not better than the Chiefs. You can make an argument, might not be able to conclusively say that you're better than the Ravens, but that's about it. Can I say you're better than the Commanders? Absolutely. Look at Buffalo. Can you say you're the other seven-win team? Can I say you're better than them? Absolutely. I don't know that Baltimore has a pass rush that can stop and contain Jared Goff. Like, I just can't say right now that there is a team that you should lose to that you absolutely are not going to be able to take on. I'm just not seeing it.
Well, with Baltimore, they're doing very un-Baltimore Orioles, how you doing, Baltimore Raven-esque things. Losing to Vegas in week two, losing to the Browns. I mean, they're showing their ankle, the Achilles heel kind of thing.
Yeah, there are certainly some issues there, no doubt about it. Being there, you also have a running game that cannot be stopped under any circumstances. Derrick Henry is doing things we've never seen a running back in his 30s do in the National Football League. Like, they are absolutely a team still to be feared, even though you couldn't name me a single receiver on that team. I'd be impressed if you're able to name Zay Flowers even, and he's actually their leading guy. Like, there's not, admittedly, I think you can beat them too, but they're the only team where I have to sit back and look and like, I'm not entirely convinced that you can do this. Like, I want to watch the Chiefs go up against this team. Kirby Joseph doing what he does, like some of the throws that Mahomes has gotten away with, like, I feel like would absolutely be interceptions, maybe even pick sixes against the Lions.
Yes,
I do feel very confident in that.
Absolutely,
and honestly, as a result, that's why I feel so confident. I don't feel like I'm jinxing this team necessarily by saying those two words that you were kind of a bit afraid to say.
Don't you
here.
Dare!
I there's no reason they can't though.
I know they
can. The Lions can win a Super Bowl in the year of our Lord 2025.
Can we call
they can do it. They absolutely can. I need to hear my fellow Lions fan brethren more full-throated about it. I'm not saying get cocky. I'm not saying get stupid about it. We saw a little bit of getting stupid before the Hutch injury. But I know the football gods around here taketh and giveth away or whatever. But, I just need to... If you're going to go out there and say that this team can go and continue to put up Madden numbers, I need to hear the next logical conclusion. Because the other teams that have done that have taken that next step.
A parade down Woodward. Bring it on.
And if they keep this up, if they do, in fact, keep up those Madden numbers, winning the big one's inevitable. Like, no team has been that consistently good over the course of an entire season and then not made it to the big dance and won.
Right.
That's all I'm asking for. I mean, I do wholeheartedly believe you can do it. Just again, the one asterisk being, Brad Holmes, make a move or two before tomorrow. Please, I'm begging you. Get us an edge rusher. Get us two. Get us all of them.
All of them.
Stockpile all of them. You know what? Make three deals. I don't care. Who else can we get involved on this party? Let's do it. I was happy to hear, by the way, that in addition to all of this, that Brad Holmes did call the Raiders on Max Crosby.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, that's all I was asking. I don't necessarily need to have had him come away with the big prize. It would have been nice. Would it still be nice? Absolutely. But the thing is, I needed to know just for my own self-assurance that they tried. And they did. That's all I was asking of you. Now go out and get whoever the next, second-tier guy is, and I'll be happy. We got to hit a break. It is Happy Hour at your local alternative Solid State Radio. So it's about that time of the week. I know this may be shocking to those of you that watched that game yesterday, but as it turns out, there were like 10 other games that had nothing to do with your Detroit Football Lions. And a lot of things happened during those games. A lot of people overreacted to those things. And as always, I feel like it's our solemn duty here at Happy Hour to sort the overreactions from the reality, the fact from the BS. Let's do this thing. Maestro, the music, please.
All right, we start with the Cowboys, where they're panicking a little bit. Dak Prescott going
good.
Out.
I love it. You just hate to see it.
He went out with a hamstring injury. So, is this an overreaction or reality? Dak Prescott's injury will end the Cowboys season.
Please. The Cowboys season's already over. This had nothing to do with Dak being out. This team's just not good. They've been outscored in their last three games, 104-54, which is, for what it's worth, the stat nerds say, the 104 points are the most points allowed in a three-game losing streak since 2010. Kirk Cousins, my God. So, the Falcons scored four touchdowns in their first eight possessions, despite the fact that Dallas was running the ball pretty well, and they held Atlanta to 100 yards rushing. Didn't matter. Cowboys only scored twice on their first eight possessions, and only one of those was a touchdown. Like, it doesn't matter. Season's already over for the Cowboys. They're not going anywhere, whether or not Dak Prescott plays. They've got themselves into a hole that there is just no way they're getting out of.
The Broncos. Broncos aren't a playoff team in 2024. Is that reality or is that an overreaction?
I mean, they did lose by 31 points, but it was to the Ravens, who, as I told you, were like the one team that I feel like could really, you can make an argument for they are better than the Lions right now, you know, even with their three losses. I am not going to say that that's the reason that they're not a playoff contender. I don't think they're making the playoffs because Kansas City is obviously going to come out of the West. I think you're going to have at least two teams come out of the AFC North. Cincinnati is quickly making it, so there's not going to be a third. But can they overtake the Chargers? That I am a little less convinced of. But the Broncos aren't out of it yet. They do have to play two games against the Chiefs yet. They have to play Atlanta after they play the Chiefs next week. But they also play the Colts, the Chargers, and the Bengals in December. And those are all teams that they are contending with for a playoff spot. If they can beat the Chargers in LA, then you know you can see a way forward here. You should beat the Colts. It looks like Joe Flacco is basically the guy the rest of the way. You should be able to beat that team, though. If you can't beat the Bengals and they end up surpassing you, then that's really, you have no one to blame but yourself for that. That's going to be the stretch right there. Those three games, Colts, Chargers, Bengals. Because you're not beating KC. I don't think you can beat KC at home or on the road. I don't think you can beat the Falcons right now. But if you can win those three games, then that will at least put you at 8-4, you know, with 8-, however many, what would you look at, like 8-7, with at least a puncher's chance to overtake the Chargers and Cincy for the division.
Yeah.
So no, I'm not writing the book based on a really bad game against a really good team.
Lamar Jackson is the MVP of the first half of the season. Do they give out that trophy?
No, not to my knowledge, but right now he looks like the guy. He's been the best passer in the league through all 9 weeks of the season, although I'd certainly make an argument that Jared Goff needs to be in this discussion. But he is leading the league with a 120.7 passer rating. Who only Brady, Rodgers, Drew Brees, and Peyton Manning have done better than that. Like, I can't take that away from him, certainly. And I think it's a fair argument to be made. I don't really think that, I would like to sit here and say Jared Goff's the guy, but I don't think I can really argue that. Like, and there's also the running component to what he does. I mean, the passing yesterday, 60 for 19, 280 yards with three touchdowns. Perfect passer rating. He only ran for 4 yards, which is even more impressive. And he's already the first QB in NFL history with 20-plus passing touchdowns and 500-plus rushing yards in the first 10 games. He could become the first guy to pass for 4,000 and rush for 1,000 in a season. And if that happens, you can't possibly deny him the MVP.
All right, moving on. Sean, is this an overreaction or is this reality? Saquon Barkley will lead the NFL in yards from scrimmage.
I don't know. Derrick Henry's making a strong push for it. And going into Sunday's game, Henry right now leads the league in rushing yards and yards from scrimmage. Of course, he's played one more game than Barkley has, as the Eagles have already had their bye. But he had 199 scrimmage yards on Sunday, 159 rushing yards, 40 receiving yards. So he's at 1,071 for the season. He's on pace to lead the NFL in rushing yards and scrimmage yards. But you do have a... Honestly, I feel like it's a reality just because, yeah, defenses have very much, they know Barkley's the guy you gotta stop, but you've got so many guys, like with A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith running that offense the way that they are, that's going to open up Barkley to get more involved in the passing game even, and really let him do what he needs to do, because there are other threats on that roster. Like, that actually may work in his favor. It's going to be close. I think it'll come down to the wire between those two guys.
There you go.
But on pace right now, like, Saquon Barkley is due to lead it. If the season ended today, that he'd be, with his one game behind, like, that's the thing. He's got a game in hand here. So I think absolutely he can and more than likely will do it. It'll be down to the wire, though.
Barkley is having one heck of a season. There's no doubt about that. I know where you're going to go with this next one, but I'm going to spoon feed it to you anyway.
Okay.
Cardinals are the best team in the NFC West. Is that overreaction or is that reality?
No. The Cardinals beat the Bears on Sunday. I'll give you that. The Niners didn't play this week, so we didn't get to see them do anything particularly anything. Arizona did beat San Fran in a head-to-head earlier in the year, but they still have to play the Seahawks, and that's one that could be a coin flip, honestly. And then you got to close the season against two division rivals in the Rams and the Niners. I'm not saying that they are the best team in the West yet. They're a threat to make the division, to get the division title, and I would even say they will make a playoff spot. I think it's very possible. But I am not willing to sit here and say right now that they're the best team in the West. Like, San Fran is until conclusively proven otherwise.
Have to agree with you. Let's go to that war field that is the NFC North.
Bring it.
Is this reality or overreaction? The Packers are the most overrated team in the NFL.
Yeah, and Jordan Love might be the most overrated quarterback in the NFL. A seven now straight games with a pick, which is the longest streak by a Packers quarterback since Brett Favre in 2006. Held without a touchdown for the second straight game. I get the weather, but the weather should be in your favor. You play in Lambeau's your home field.
Yeah.
You should be used to this by now.
Yes.
You have no excuse for going out there and just laying an egg like that one. You've got good wins against the Texans and against the Cardinals, but you've now lost two games to division rivals. You've lost to Philly, and you've allowed an average of nearly 30 points a game in those three games. Like, they're a good team. They're a team that's going to make the playoffs. I do think that still you could have three teams from the NFC North make the playoffs this year. No doubt in my mind that is still very much in play. But I also don't think that the Packers can get it done against the teams that they need to beat. Like, you can beat an Arizona team that is good, but not elite. You beat a Houston team that is good, borderline great, but not elite.
Houston's good.
But Detroit is the team to beat in the NFC. You couldn't get it done against them. Minnesota is every bit of a playoff contender. You can't beat them. You couldn't beat Detroit at home, and you couldn't beat the Eagles, who knows if they'll end up, they're a 6-2 team, they should make the playoffs, but you can't get it done when it really counts. I can't sit here and say anything more than you're going to be a wild card team, that gets knocked out in the wild card round.
Can we tip the cap, raise a glass to the Lions fan who had the cheese grater hat?
That was fantastic. I love that. That man truly, Phil, the word hero gets thrown around a lot. But
and the camera loved him.
As well he should. As well it should have.
Good for him.
I can't be mad about that at all.
All right. Is this overreaction or reality? The Lions are the best team in the NFL.
I will say they are bar none the best team in the AFC. Or NFC, sorry. They are the best team in the NFC. And you could argue that they're the best team in the NFL. Baltimore might have a few words about that. But I think that's reality. The Chiefs are the last team to to have not suffered a loss yet. But, like I said earlier in this show, they have gotten at times lucky. Like, the fact that Mahomes' touchdown interception ratio is currently underwater, like, most teams would not be able to overcome that. They have, because their defense is absolutely elite, and they have gotten, you know, arguably maybe a little bit of help from the refs, but everyone's thinking it, and a lot of people are actually saying
it.
But that was the win you saw yesterday, that proved it. Like, this team going in to a less than favorable opponent's turf, less than favorable weather conditions.
Yep.
But people still going, oh, Jared Goff can't play outside. He can't play if he's not in a dome. Yeah, I think we saw yesterday conclusively that narrative is, in fact, BS. I am not, honestly, with this team, they can go and beat just about anyone. They can hang with anybody in this league. You can put them up against KC right now, and I think you would beat them, and you would beat them convincingly. I think you could squeak out a win against the Ravens. There's not a team I can look at in the NFL and say, no, you Lions can't beat them. Even with the issues that we've seen with your pass rush, I'm not seeing a team that you can't go out there and win against. So I think by that alone, I have to say that, yes, that is reality. The Lions are the best team in the NFL. Now let's just really cinch that and make some moves before tomorrow afternoon, okay? How about that? Can we do that? That'd be great.
I like it. Let's do it.
There's your overreactions. It is happy hour. We'll come back and wrap this thing up next. Stick around. So I'm kind of burned out on the Lions talk. I don't know about you. I mean, not that I'm not having fun with it, and not that I'm not enjoying every minute of the run that that this team is currently on. And like we covered it all, though. Like we played you all the calls. We expounded at length on the Brian Branch thing. And a footnote to that: do you think he's getting suspended or fined over either the hit or the double birds?
I don't think. Neither.
I think there's a fine incoming. I hope not a suspension, but I feel like there's a very good chance that there might be. Now, that being said, we've basically run out of Lions stuff to really get into until a trade is made tomorrow, so you know that'll probably be what we lead off with Friday. And really, there's not much to say about Michigan or Michigan State at this point, because we both got blown out.
They were both atrocious.
You guys by, arguably the best team in the Big Ten, and us by... admittedly, an undefeated team, but 47-10 still hurts, man.
Yeah.
There's no feeling good about that. There just isn't. So rather than sit here and drown our sorrows in that,
yeah,
let's go ahead and I found something here that I'm curious as to your input on this, as especially us as people who have made a lot of life choices and arguably quite a few not great ones. What is a piece of common advice that you think is actually bad?
Actually bad?
Yes. Oh. And I do have examples if you're looking for that sort of thing.
I would think the suggestion, and it's usually from the religious people, that you shouldn't live in sin, that you shouldn't live with somebody until you marry them.
I feel like that's the worst advice you can give somebody.
Oh, yeah.
Let me tell you. So, obviously, the wife and I lived together for a good 2 years before we ended up getting hitched.
Yep.
And it's honestly the smartest thing you can really do. Like, you don't really know someone until you have to live with them.
Right.
You really don't know someone until a pandemic comes and shuts down the entire country and you have to spend most of your waking moments with them. But you really don't know someone until you've actually cohabitated with them. And, or at the very least, you really don't know someone until you've gone on a 2-week tent camping trip with them.
Yeah, but you really don't know somebody until you walk out of the bathroom, they walk in and start dry heaving.
Yeah, like you really... I don't feel like you truly know someone just because you can fake it long enough if you live in separate in separate houses, separate whatever.
Right.
Like you can make it, you can fake it long enough, but it's when you really get to know those things that absolutely drive you insane and figure out whether or not you can live with that, that you really truly, you know that you can make an educated decision as to can I commit to spending the rest of my life with this person.
Right.
No, you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
That is a huge one. The top one that comes up here, the one that seems to have the most reaction really, and well, something about this one. Follow your passion and the money will come. Sometimes it's better to balance passion with practical skills or a stable source of income.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of people say, oh no, just keep doing what you want to do. It'll work out eventually. Not really. I mean, if somebody's passion is, you know, typewriter repair, you're probably going to have a rough time of it.
I mean, as someone who basically turned his, passion such as it was into my at least, you know, somewhat full-time job.
Right.
Let me tell you, it ain't always great. Like, especially when your passion is apparently to go into radio, then you really realize it. Oh, hey, look at all the everyone's getting laid off in this entire industry again.
Yeah, look at that.
You know, that just it's not always necessarily advisable. But I feel like sometimes what the key is just to find something that you don't hate and do that you're good at.
Exactly.
Like, arguably, I haven't found that thing yet that I'm good at and don't hate and can make a living at. So, you know, we're still kind of searching there. But, you know, eventually our day will come, I suppose.
Sure.
Good things come to those who wait after taking a bunch of actions towards the desired outcome. Which I know is probably one of those where it's, you know, much like the customer is always right is not necessarily the end-all be-all of that statement, but, you know, it's just, it doesn't have the same ring to it.
I don't know. Lately I've been really subscribing to the whole theme of fortune favors the bold.
Right.
So if you're just sitting around waiting for something to happen, a promotion, a job opportunity, a romantic conquest.
Right. And how's that fortune favoring you, sir?
Usually, when you make that initiative, it helps out. It's when you're a lot of times you sit around waiting and waiting and waiting. You know, he who hesitates loses, or whatever that saying goes.
That it truly does. And with that being said, the fortune favors the bold one is definitely I would argue is one that actually isn't a bad piece of advice. Certainly, I mean it's worked out for us, I guess.
Sure, sure. Patience. You need that, but as you are pushing forward towards what you want.
See, I'm terrible at that. The whole patience part of things. Yeah. As you well know about me by now.
Yep.
It's not. It's not really in my skill set, man. That much has become, I'm sure, very much. Evident to you.
Yeah.
Money doesn't buy happiness. Well, sure, but it sure makes it a lot easier to live a comfortable lifestyle. It may not buy happiness, but it buys everything else. Yeah, I can't.
Pretty much. It can keep, I mean, it can make you live comfortably, take away stress of wondering how bills are not going to get paid. But ultimately, it's up to you to be a good person so, you know, your wife doesn't leave you, your kids don't hate you, and everything else. But, I mean...
But can at least keep it can keep me from being stressed about are we going to be able to pay the mortgage this month?
Right.
That'd be nice.
Yes.
Like everyone who says that money, well, all right, go give me all your money then. If money doesn't buy happiness, like I will gladly take that excess money that is not making you happy.
Yeah, the people who don't have a financial issue, yeah, they say money can't buy happiness.
Yeah, that always the thing it's said by rich people.
Oh yeah,
every single time. you'll never hear a broke person say that. And there's
nope.
a. Reason for that. Everyone deserves a second chance. Some people do not, nor should their second chance necessarily involve those they have wronged.
It all depends on the situation. I mean, there's some real dastardly things that you can do to somebody.
Well, you're also like, Mr. Everyone deserves a 40th, 50th chance, Adam. So.
But I mean, you know, we're talking about, you know, like celebrities who are like the whole P. Diddy thing. Does he deserve a second chance? No, absolutely not.
I feel like he's blown through about 40,000 of those at this point.
Yeah. I mean, does Bill Cosby deserve it? No, of course not.
Not at all.
You know, it's, but I mean, if you lend somebody your car and they crack it for whatever reason, you know, maybe they deserve it. I mean, if it's not their
fault, I'm never letting them drive my car again. Ever. No.
So I guess my luck,
they'll go plow into a deer and then...
That was my job.
Supposed to let me do that. What gives? Who do you think you are taking on the deer hitting responsibilities in this family?
It's just a vehicle. The deer's like, oh, I thought it was Sean. My mistake.
Yeah, no, not so much. I mean, there's a difference between, you know, forgiving someone and giving them the opportunity to make that, to do the thing again that they got the second chance from. And I, as you may have noticed by how we do unsolicited advice every week.
Yeah. Yeah.
I am very much, no, I'm done. You screw me over once, I'm done with you. And I'm quite frankly a lot happier this way.
Yes. Yes, you were definitely the cut all contact kind of guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Never take no for an answer. Yeah, there are definitely some times where you should probably take no for an answer that were just covered in the last bit.
Wait for the alcohol to kick it. No. And then try again.
Yeah, no. That's absolutely, like, you know, sometimes you really should just take no for an answer and move on. Like, you know, continuing to pester the girl after you've already asked her out and she's told you no like five or six times. No. Sometimes persistence is not necessarily a
virtue. I think they're talking about
virtue.
Maybe in the business field, in your career field. But, yeah, other times, yeah, you should probably learn how to say no, hear the word no and accept it.
Accept it. The only exception to this, I would say, where I'm actually fine with not taking no for an answer, is Brad Holmes with the general manager of the Raiders right now. don't accept no from them on a Max Crosby trade.
Well, I mean, rumor has it that he did call Davis, but Davis was getting his hair cut and he couldn't hear anything over the weed whacker. So
that's true. I guess we have got to put Mark Davis on the apology list now.
I guess.
I don't feel like he really has earned that. But now here's an interesting one, and I disagree that this is bad advice.
Okay.
Or is not good advice or whatever. Don't go to bed angry. The comment response to this, I feel like sometimes you need some time to calm down before you can properly respond and talk things through. But this is one where I wholeheartedly disagree. It might not be 5 seconds later, but we are very insistent, the wife and I, on talking. Like, we're talking this stuff out before we go to bed because we're not going to have one of us having to sleep on a couch. Like, this just not going to happen.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
We're going to, if there's a problem, yo, we'll solve it. You know,
yeah.
Check out the hook.
Well, I guess it all depends on the problem. I mean, if it's something simple, you know, what do you want to do on Saturday night? Where do you guys want to go for dinner? Blah, blah, blah. If it's something like really huge, like, you know, remodeling the living room or doing something, you know, a big decision making and you're at a disagreement. If you're going to sit there and wait until you're not mad anymore, you solve it. You may be awake for a long time.
I don't know. Haven't really had that come. I mean, with the caveat, I guess, that obviously if we're drunk when the disagreement is coming up,
yeah,
then no, yeah, definitely we're not talking about it tonight.
Yeah.
But in like 95% of other instances, I can honestly say it works. Like there's no good that comes of you stewing around the house mad at each other for the next 2 days. Like, I hate when people do that. Like, here, I'm going to do something that's really just going to tick you off, and then I'm going to make you wait 2 days for us to say anything about it. Because you know what that does to me? That just makes me more mad.
Yeah.
That just only intensifies this. Ab's been on the receiving end of this. He knows.
Yeah. My parents used to do that all the time. I mean, not all the time, but once a year, they would get mad about something. It started out with something simple, like they didn't set the coffee maker timer. Or something like that. But yeah, it'd go like 2 or 3 days where they're just mad at each other.
Yeah, like I don't feel like any good necessarily comes from that. And like in our case, we're certainly not going to want to talk about it in the morning because Rachel's not what you call a morning person. And I just refuse to acknowledge that morning exists.
Right.
So like, we're just going to talk about it when we're not fully awake yet. That's going to make the situation even worse. I'd like, nah, let's put the kibosh on this long before that.
Right.
Like that is probably the far better course of action, I find. So, no, sure. I disagree that that one is a bad piece of advice. One more before we get out of here, and I agree with this wholeheartedly. The if you can't handle me at my worst, you don't deserve me at my best. Like, if your worst is seriously, like, bad enough that you're, like, driving people away on a regular enough basis to have that be a motivating thing in your life, then you probably are just a terrible person.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, we must be talking about, like, a romantic kind of relationship, because if I'm with a friend...
No, it absolutely is, yeah.
If I'm with a friend... You know, there's certain friends I can talk about anything except for, you know, politics. Then they become their worst, or I become my worst, whichever way you want to look at it. And it's just like, okay, yeah, we're not talking politics. We're not talking about this. We're not talking about that. And I'm not going to deal with you when you're acting like such and such. But if you're in a romantic relationship and, you know, you can't deal with, you know, she's crying, so I left. You know, you can't do that.
You know, I agree with that. I mean, I don't know, because sometimes, like, some people do use that as, like, just an excuse to just be a garbage person, like, treat their significant other like crap, and no, I don't stand for that.
No, yeah.
Like, if you can't handle me when I'm, you know, being verbally or maybe even physically abusive, you don't deserve me when I'm, you know, trying to buy your love with nice things. Like,
yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No. I don't subscribe to that, and with the friends even less so. If you can't handle me when I'm drunk and yelling about how you're not my real friends, you don't deserve me when I'm pretending like you're my real friends. No, sometimes, once again, the people don't always deserve second chances. That is very much where that comes into play.
Sure.
On that note, we got to get out of here. On that note, a full hour of local original music comes your way next on a little show we like to call Solid State Sessions. On that note, we'll talk to you tomorrow afternoon at 3, hopefully with Max Crosby or somebody of that caliber in Detroit. See ya!